Today on the Run to the Top podcast.
At a certain point of exercise intensity, your body will shift from fat burning to carbohydrate burning. And we can pinpoint where that's at from a pace perspective and heart rate. And then we can really describe this whole association of how efficient or inefficient an endurance runner is.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Sinead Hockey.
Hi everyone, Sinead here, back with you again for this latest episode of Run to the Top, brought to you by Runners Connect. Thank you so much for joining me today. Whether you're listening to this on your run or perhaps at the gym, I hope you're having a great day so far and that you enjoy this podcast. Before we jump into today's interview, I want to share a little bit about last week's episode, just in case you missed it. I had the pleasure of speaking with runner and co-founder of Run Angel, David Caron, who together with his wife Ellen decided it was time to create something that could offer both peace of mind and security for runners. That's how Run Angel is born, which is the first personal safety wrist wearable ever that not only sends SMS messages and emails to loved ones in the event of an emergency, but also emits a 120 decibel high-pitched siren when activated. Not just that, but David also shared with us some really great safety tips for those days when you're running by yourself, as so many of us often do. It was a really important interview for all runners, so if you missed it, be sure to check it out. On to this week's episode. Contrary to popular belief, losing or even maintaining weight while training for a marathon can be incredibly difficult. Many marathoners either find they can't quite achieve the weight loss they want, or on the flip side, they're able to lose weight at the cost of performance. Neither route is all that appealing. It's a hard balance to strike, but with the latest research, it's starting to become much, much easier. The research in question revolves around the two concepts of nutrition periodization and something called metabolic efficiency training, which together increase the body's ability to use fat as fuel during exercise and thus optimize your body composition, but also your performance. I'll stop there because today's guest actually created these concepts. His name is Bob Sibahar, and he's a registered dietitian, exercise physiologist, NSCA certified strength and conditioning specialist, and USA Triathlon Level 3 elite coach. Clearly, Bob wears a lot of hats. And he also traveled to the 2008 Summer Olympic Games as a sport dietitian for the U.S. Olympic team. Needless to say, Bob knows his stuff, and I am so excited to pick his brain in today's interview. Before we jump into it, if you enjoy today's podcast or Run to the Top in general, please consider leaving a rating or review at iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Sounds like a shameless plug, I know, but this actually helps us reach more runners like yourself and also bring on more of the sport's leading influencers. I want to make Run to the Top as helpful and entertaining for you as I can, so this would be a huge help. On the same note, if you have any suggestions as to how I can improve the show, or maybe you know of someone who would make a good guest, please let me know at hockey@runnersconnect.net. That's HAUGHEY at runnersconnect.net. I would love to hear from you, so please do send in your suggestions. Anyway, that's enough from me. After a quick break to thank our sponsor, we'll be right back with our interview. On this week's episode, we're actually sponsoring ourselves. If you're looking for a custom training plan, coaching support, and an amazing team of supportive, like-minded runners, head on over to runnersconnect.net/train. There you can start your free 2-week trial and add your name to the nearly 1,000 fellow runners we've helped achieve new personal bests. Again, that's runnersconnect.net/train. We hope you join us. Thanks for joining us, Bob.
Well, thank you for having me.
Bob, I'm so glad to have you on again. Like we were just talking about before the interview here, you were on, we actually interviewed you for the Nutrition Summit a few months back, and I was so interested in all you had to say. I was just kind of regretting that we had to kind of cut it short due to time constraints. So we are going to get to delve a little bit deeper here today, and I'm glad we've got the opportunity to do that here. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. So, Bob, first off, before we get into these major concepts of yours, the nutrition periodization and metabolic efficiency training, I did want to talk to you a little bit about just yourself and your background. Something I found really funny on your website was it says that it kind of breaks down the alphabet soup behind your name, because you do you've got quite a few titles to your name there. So I wanted to talk to you about your background a little bit there first. So first off, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I do a lot, and it's kind of hard to introduce myself sometimes because I kind of have to kind of set the scene and based on who I'm talking to. But I have a couple different hats that I wear in energy performance. One is a sport dietitian, one is an exercise physiologist, one is a strength coach, certified strength and conditioning specialist. And then the last one is an endurance coach or a USA Triathlon certified coach. So there's quite a few things I do on a daily basis. You know, I love it when people ask me, what does a typical day look like? Because there really isn't a typical day. It could be, you know, mostly coaching. It could be mostly nutrition and sport dietetics, or it could be about a blend of everything. So really what I love about what I do and why I'm so passionate is because I get to combine the trades of the fields of nutrition and exercise testing and strength and conditioning and coaching, and really understanding where people are coming from, whether they're athletes, whether they're fitness enthusiasts, and really, you know, kind of understanding, this is what I pride myself in, is understanding the whole picture of them. And even as this, you know, with the sport dietetics, is understanding a little bit more of the medical nature of how nutrition affects health. So I love that I'm a little bit more, you know, I always think of approaching a person at a 360 degree view, right? It's not you're not just coming to me to learn about nutrition. And, you know, as we talk more about nutrition periodization, you'll learn that, but it's really understanding that whole person before you make any recommendations. And that's just what I love about my day-to-day job. It's not even a job. It's my passion.
Absolutely. It's so nice when you love what you do. So, you know, like you said, I think it's great that you do kind of take that 360 approach, because it's so individual to everybody. And I do want to talk to you about your consultant work later on. But first off, you know, in addition to all of these things, you're also an author to boot. And one of your books is on the concept that you came up with, which is metabolic efficiency training. So first off, can you just tell us a little bit about what this is and how it relates to your other concept, nutrition periodization?
Absolutely. So metabolic efficiency training is my brainchild from about, so let's say 12, 13 years ago, somewhere around that, where it really, the concept, if you don't mind if I explain the whole origination, because it's quite fascinating. I was working in a sports medicine clinic as their sport dietitian and kept seeing these long distance endurance athletes, right? These Ironman athletes, these marathoners, ultra marathoners. And they kept presenting with the same issue, and an issue that I've had as an endurance athlete myself, and that was gastrointestinal or GI distress. So I was fascinated, absolutely fascinated, why I couldn't figure out how to get rid of GI distress. So not only for me, but for all these individuals. So I kind of went back to the books, so to speak, right? So I went to school for exercise physiology, exercise science, and nutrition, food science and human nutrition. So I had a lot of my research papers, I had a lot of books. So I was wondering if I just missed something in classes, you know, and you're sitting in college and sometimes you miss things that professors say, or, you know, so I was just wondering, God, did I just miss that lecture? Or what, did I just not understand a concept? And lo and behold, I came up with the fact that the body has almost infinite stores of fat. And I say almost infinite, even for like the leanest of the lean marathon runner, these elites that are, you know, almost breaking the 2-hour barrier for the male race, they still have about 30,000 calories of fat in their body. but we're very limited in our carbohydrate stores. And depending on the gender and the size of the individual, we may have, you know, a female may have around 1200, 1400 calories, and a larger male may have around 2000 calories. So when I looked at that, I said, oh yeah, I remember that. But then I said, I wonder if there's an opportunity to teach the body, because we burn carbs so much throughout the day. And we know that. We were always like, I was taught to eat as many carbs as possible as an endurance runner, right? Because that's what your body burns. So the question became, I wonder if we could teach our body, mobilize, if you will, all this fat that we have stored. And that was the birth of metabolic efficiency training. So metabolic efficiency training really is looking at the opportunity to use the fat that we have stored already, preserve our very, very limited carbohydrate stores, and do that by altering the daily nutrition plan. I try not to call it a diet because it really isn't. And then altering a little bit of the exercise. So metabolic efficiency training is the blend of nutrition and exercise adaptations to improve the body's fat burning ability and at the same time, carbohydrate preservation ability. So it's not all about, and I know we'll talk about this whole low carb, high fat, ketogenic stuff. It's not about going to the extremes. It's about utilizing the right nutrients at the right time. So as an example, if you teach your body to burn carbs, you'll store fat. If you teach your body to burn fat, you'll store carbs. Now it's not, I'm making it very simplistic, but we want to be able to burn carbs and fat, but we want to be more efficient, hence the name metabolic efficiency, at burning fat at certain times, because our body will always burn carbohydrates, but it doesn't burn fat efficiently, especially as we increase the intensity of exercise.
Absolutely. That, I mean, that makes complete sense too. And talking about the nutrition side of things, we're going to talk about exercise in a little bit here, but as far as nutrition goes, with nutrition periodization, obviously no runner is going to run the exact same distance every day or the exact same intensity every day. Depending on their buildup, they are always doing something different. So how does that come into play with nutrition periodization?
Yeah, so it's fascinating. So the story of nutrition periodization. So I grew up an athlete, did not really get into running as a sport until midway through my undergrad in college. I actually grew up a competitive soccer player. So you can argue there's still obviously a huge run component there.
Yeah.
but back in, this was my first book that I published. This was back in 2000, what was it? I think it was 2004, 2003, 2004. I, as an athlete and as a sport dietitian back then, I couldn't understand why, just like you brought up, I couldn't understand why if an athlete was in a huge build cycle, like they're training for a marathon, they're putting in a lot of miles, they're doing track repeats, hill repeats, why can't they figure out their nutrition, right? Versus an off season or a taper mode or whatever it is. And I started thinking about that. I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I had that proverbial light bulb and thinking, oh, these runners, these individuals aren't aligning their physical training with their nutritional needs. And really that was the birth of nutrition periodization. So really in a nutshell, nutrition periodization is simply combining the right type and amount of nutrition to support physical training. So when you're going through your ebbs and flows of physical training, running, you go through ebbs and flows of nutritional support. And I think that's where a lot of runners miss the boat, because sometimes and there's so many crazy things happening out here, right? The fasted training, the ketogenic diets, nobody really knows what to do. So, you know, like I might be 3 weeks out of a marathon, putting in some really good miles, and all of a sudden I'm thinking, wow, I'm doubting myself, because should I go on a fasted run? Should I eat all these carbohydrates after my long run now? Like nobody knows what to do anymore. The basic concept is align your nutrition to support your physical training while considering your health and body weight, body composition goals. That's that really in the big picture, nutrition periodization is the foundation. Metabolic efficiency training is one aspect that you'll use, and I think you'll use quite a bit throughout your annual training year, your nutrition, or your physical periodization lead up to any race that you're training for.
Absolutely. And you know, you kind of touched on something interesting there where you said a lot of the kind of literature around running and nutrition, it doesn't really tell you like how much you're supposed to eat, when you're supposed to eat, and so on. So And that goes, the same goes for meal plans when runners are trying to lose weight on top of performing well. So a lot of meal plans, yeah, they don't take into consideration how long you're running, what kind of workouts you're doing. So that's where I do feel like metabolic efficiency training could really benefit somebody, not just in terms of performance, but also if they're trying to lose weight. So that's something.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's another aspect I kind of wanted to talk to you about was how does that kind of benefit a runner who is trying to both reach their running goals, but also reach their body composition and maybe weight loss goals?
Yeah. So let me intro that answer by saying this, because I've been thinking about a lot about this recently since we agreed to do the second interview. And I thought of something very profound I wanted to share with you and your listeners. So metabolic efficiency training, the best thing about it is that it's not a diet. The worst thing about it is that it's not a diet, right? So let me explain that a little bit. So metabolic efficiency training is beautiful, and I'll get into this in a second, because the focus is merely controlling blood sugar and optimizing blood sugar. And I'll get into the whys behind this and why it's so important. The beauty of it is that it's teaching to have a healthy relationship with food. It's teaching intuitive eating. It's teaching about your hunger and satiety cues. It's not following a specific calorie goal or calorie level throughout the day. In contrast, a lot of individuals don't like it because it doesn't provide that, right? So in my line of business, I want to make as many runners completely independent of me, right? So I don't want them dependent on following calories and grams and all this stuff. I want to be able to teach, and that's what I try to do through the concept of metabolic efficiency training, is teach them about this intuitive eating. And yes, will we fail sometimes? Yeah. Will we overeat? Yeah. Will we undereat? Yeah. But that's part of the process of bringing our intuitive eating back to where it should be, you know, back when we were a kid, when we actually were better intuitive eaters. So with that intro, metabolic efficiency, because the goal, the main goal, is controlling and optimizing blood sugar through food, it can actually have a very profound, not only on performance, I'll get to that in a second, but I always look at the health perspective first. So I work with a lot of different individuals, a lot of different ages, young runners, older runners, masters runners, right? Obviously, we can always say and agree that we are an aging society, right? And I would argue, as I'm aging too, that you kind of save the best for the later years in your life, right? You don't really know a lot in your teens and your 20s. Then you start to figure things out in your 30s, 40s, and you start to get a little wiser in your 50s. And then you really get to learn about yourself. So what I would say is controlling and optimizing blood sugar through food, this metabolic efficiency training, will have a profound effect on health, of which, and the reason I bring this up is because we, as we age, we have this, unfortunately, I call it biological degradation, right? So certain things, call it genetics, call it whatever it is. It could be an injury state. It could be that your parents or grandparents gave you high cholesterol or whatever the diagnosis. Controlling blood sugar is really the foundation of everything in terms of health. Now, if we move to performance, controlling blood sugar is also the foundation, because we want to be able to have steady energy levels. That's controlling blood sugar. So we don't want to have these highs and lows. So think about if you I always love this topic. You eat a banana. Banana is not a bad food, right? But if you eat a banana that only has carbohydrates, only has sugar in it, it will raise your blood sugar in probably 10 to 20 minutes. You'll feel great, but then you're going to crash. So, and then you're going to have to eat something else. But if you put a little bit of nut butter with that, which has protein and fat, you control and you optimize blood sugar. So here are the performance implications, which you can argue the body composition and body weight could be health and or performance, because it really does fit into both, right? Implications are that when you control and optimize blood sugar, basically through food, as I'm talking about, you will not only control your energy level, but you'll control your hormone fluctuation. And specifically, we're identifying the hormone insulin. Insulin is a very good hormone. It's not a bad guy by any means. But whenever your blood sugar is high, if I just eat a banana, my blood sugar is high, there's this little process in your body, of this metabolic process, that actually turns down fat burning quite significantly. There's some blockages there with certain enzymes that get turned off. So if I just have a banana, I'm feeling good for a few minutes. but I'm actually accelerating carbohydrate burning, of which, if you remember, we have very, very limited stores of that. And I'm decreasing fat burning, of which we have almost unlimited stores. So when it comes to trying to teach our body to burn fat, to lose weight, to decrease our body fat composition, even to improve different health markers, if we don't control blood sugar, we're actually going to be behind the eight ball quite substantially.
Interesting. So it really sounds like the key to both your body composition and performance goals is to keep that blood sugar pretty consistent. You don't want a whole lot of spiking throughout the day.
Exactly. That bingo. And that's where a lot of these crazy, you know, we'll talk about these crazy quote unquote diets. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't even have to quote unquote them, because they, you know, there's a lot of myths out there for sure. And I'll say this, because a lot of people do get confused with this. The bottom line of metabolic efficiency training, yes, is from the nutritional standpoint, is controlling and optimizing blood sugar through combining food sources of protein, of fat, and fiber. So fiber predominantly being vegetables, fruits, and whole grains, right? But a lot of people don't know those next steps. The next steps is looking at really what do I want to affect with my health? What do I want to affect with my body weight? Do I, you know, am I bringing back into the concept nutrition periodization? Am I in a heavy build cycle or am I in off season? Because a lot of times the quantities of protein, fat, and fiber will be different based on your training. And that's just like you said earlier, that's nutrition periodization. It's eating to support your training. Well, if I'm in off season right now and I'm not really training, I'm just keeping fit. Well, I can restructure the proportions of nutrients, but in the end of the day, my goal is still to control and optimize blood sugar.
Okay. Very interesting. So I want to get back to that in a second here, what you're talking about with macronutrients and how it kind of changes depending on what time of year it is. But one thing I want to touch on before we get to that, a little earlier, you were talking about how eating isn't quite as intuitive as it might have been when we were kids. First off, why do you think it becomes less and less intuitive for us, especially for runners who, you know, we're burning quite a lot of calories? You think it would be pretty intuitive for us, especially.
Isn't that interesting? Because we always think of that. So, you know, I wear a Garmin, you know, when I run, and, you know, it gives you all this great data, right? So we're always, I think the good thing and the bad thing is we're always focused on these numbers. So, wow, I just ran and I burned 500 calories, but is it, you know, a calorie is not a calorie. We can get to that later if you want to. And all these nutrients, carb, protein, and fat, they have different, what I call metabolic fates in your body. They're burned differently. They're used differently, right? So, but back to your question, when we're born, even when we're young kids, we do have this intuitive eating. You know, we eat when we're hungry. We stop when we're not hungry. Now, as the environment shapes us, and as we impart rules and restrictions upon us, be it from our parents, be it whomever, schools, whoever is giving these rules, like, oh, you can't get up from the dinner table until you finish all the food on your plate, or you can't have dessert until you finish your vegetables. You know, all these rules and restrictions, these are the things that now shape us into becoming less intuitive eaters and more either habitual eaters, which is eating based on a certain time of the day, even if you're not hungry, or less emotional eaters, where we're eating out of a certain emotion of stress, of boredom, of fatigue, of happiness even, right? So as we become adults, we shift into non-intuitive or eaters. And my whole goal, especially with metabolic efficiency training, is to bring back the intuitive eating. Now, it's one of the hardest things anybody could do because we haven't revisited it. I mean, if you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, whatever, it's been decades since you even knew what intuitive eating was. So it is, I will tell everybody this, it's a rough road. It's a hard process. That's why diets fail, because they don't address this issue, this behavior change. Diets just give macronutrient levels, calorie levels, whatever, say, eat this, don't eat this. What they don't account for is the very complex behavior change mechanisms that are set forth within each individual. And some people are ready to make that change. Some people aren't. Some people think they are, and they'll go on a diet, but they're not really ready for it yet.
Very interesting. And you know, that you actually talking about emotional eating, I feel like that would be pretty hard to break free of in and of itself. I think most people are guilty of that, myself included. So it is interesting how that kind of shifts between from when you were a child and then when you get older, how your eating does kind of shift a little bit there. But when you, I mean, when you consult your athletes, how is it ever difficult to get, I mean, runners, they tend to be very numbers focused people. So is it hard to get them to kind of shift their philosophy a little bit there?
My, my first goal for every time I talk to anybody about nutrition, my first goal is to introduce a qualitative approach before a quantitative approach. And it's really, it's just because all the runners and triathletes and endurance athletes I work with, they are very quantitatively based, and that's fine. Like we need some quantitative, we need to measure our miles, our pace, whatever it is, or, you know, but when it comes to nutrition, the number one success that is proven to actually teach your body to come back to intuitive eating is following a qualitative approach before you introduce quantitative. So that is, yes, it's extremely difficult. And sometimes I'll bargain with runners and say, okay, you know, can you give me a little, I'll give you a little and you give me a little, right? Mm-hmm. We won't go completely qualitative, but we won't go completely quantitative. So, but I will tell you this, whenever someone starts on this path, they must be prepared to take a couple steps back. Sometimes they'll have great days and they're like, wow, I feel great. And I'm not measuring anything. I'm not counting anything. My stomach doesn't feel bloated. I don't feel heavy. I had a great run. In other days, maybe they had just a few more bites than they should have for breakfast or whatever it is. And all of a sudden they have some bloating and those are not failures. Those are actually part of the process goals that we set in place to learn more about their body. So it can be tricky in the beginning. The first 3 to 4 weeks are the roughest road. But after that, people really learn about their bodies more. You know what really puts a little monkey wrench in it is career, is social engagements, is family. Family is usually a supportive piece, but not all the time.
Yeah, definitely. I can see where it would be very hard to make that transition, but once you get over that initial hump, I think you'd be more in tune with your body. That seems to be kind of the underlying thing of metabolic efficiency training, just getting more in tune with yourself.
Absolutely.
Very interesting. Yeah.
And creating that healthy relationship with food again. And you kind of mentioned, you know, about that emotional eating. You don't want to try to completely get rid of that, because a little emotional eating actually goes a long way into creating that healthy relationship with food, but you want to be in control of your emotional eating. That's the key.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Yep. I think too much restriction is very unhealthy. And so I'm glad you said a little emotional eating here and there is okay. But so that's really cool. So you were talking about macronutrients a little bit earlier, and I did want to get back to that. So you kind of mentioned that for the best results when it comes to performance and body composition, you kind of want to change your macronutrients ratio a little bit throughout the year. So how does that work? How can runners do that to kind of better use fat as fuel, like you said?
Yeah. So there's not a right or wrong. Certainly what we know is, from what we were taught and from what I was taught in university, you know, years and years and years ago, was we know a high carb, low fat diet really is not it. I think a lot of studies and research has proven that, you know, maybe that extreme isn't the best extreme. So what we're starting to do is come down a little bit and not necessarily go low carb, high fat, but we're trying to, this is part of the behavior change. For an individual like I used to be, you know, over a decade ago, super high carb, super low fat, what I would have to do is strategically decrease their carbohydrates while we strategically get protein and fat where it needs to be. So what I'm telling you is I start at a very qualitative level and introduce what I call my hand model, right? And this is how I teach people, is, you know, my mantra is simple is sustainable. I use both their hands, and the hand is measured from their wrist to their fingertips. And this is qualitative, and it drives the analytical runners crazy because they're not counting, right? But basically saying one hand from your wrist to your fingertips is the volume of protein that you will consume at a meal. and you reduce that by 50% for snacks if you're going to snack. The other hand is the volume of fiber that you have per meal, and that is vegetables, fruits, and/or whole grains. So the fat actually comes in with the protein. Most protein sources, unless you're vegetarian, have a good amount of fat in them already. So you don't really necessarily have to account for another hand of fat. Unless you're trying to follow the low carb, high fat or the ketogenic diet, then it's a little bit different. But in basic terms, I try to introduce this. It's really, if you look at the hands, it's a 1-to-1 ratio of carbohydrate to protein. One hand is carbs, one hand is protein. In the real world, this works really well initially for allowing runners to let go of the numbers and let go of the calorie counting. It's not exact, right? There's some things, you know, you're not going to eat a handful of peanut butter or a handful of yogurt, right? There are just things that don't work into it. But what it's doing is it's liberating individuals from getting away from calorie counting to actually redeveloping their intuitive eating. Once they're back on that path, then we can really, just like you were asking, we can really fine tune their macronutrients and say, okay, now let's get very specific based on your periodization of training. But initially, I will tell you this, most individuals in a, I will call it base training or a taper or even off season, will fare very, very well with a 1-to-1 or one hand to the other hand ratio of carbohydrate to protein most of the time. Unless there's, I mean, this is just generalizing it, not being specific for body weight, body composition goals. In heavy times of training, and this has to be pretty heavy, especially with runners, and certainly depends on the level. Like if you're going to get a beginning marathoner who's putting in, you know, maybe 15, 20 miles a week, like really beginning, this may be a little bit too extreme for them. But in a more build intensity cycle, you could go up to a 2-to-1 ratio of two hands of carbohydrate to one hand of protein. Now, it may seem like a lot of food, and it might be for some individuals. The key is not necessarily all that volume. The key is the ratio. So you can do, you know, the ratio is really what's important, is this 1-to-1 ratio or 2-to-1 ratio carbohydrate to protein. So that's the easiest way to periodize those macronutrients to support training cycle without getting into complete customization.
Very interesting. I love that visual too, because it kind of does, obviously, like you said, work away from being so numbers oriented, but it's also just more convenient, yep. I think. So that's
great. Way convenient because you can actually take it to a restaurant. You can, you know, and you don't have to feel like, oh my gosh, I need to input this into my software program and see. Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that's wrong, but it's liberating you to actually understand food and your hunger levels a little bit more.
Yeah, and I think that also gets back to just having a healthier relationship with food. You know, most people aren't going to bring their food scales to a restaurant, so you can actually go out and eat and enjoy yourself. Yeah. So that's great. So yeah. Bob, you kind of touched on these diets a little bit, and I do want to talk about the low carb, high fat diet here for a sec. So like you said, the pendulum has kind of swung from one extreme to the other in the last few decades. I remember, you know, it used to be quite a lot on the opposite side of the spectrum with it being high carb, low fat. So So the trend has definitely changed. But what do you think of this diet, and what do you think of the extremes in general? Are these, would you not really advise runners to go with these?
Well, here's an interesting fact that I'm still getting from the university, the college setting, from these dietitians coming out of school. They're still teaching the old method. And while they may be doing some, you know, updated research literature review, unfortunately, this method is still being taught. So I say this for the runners who are listening. If you seek out a registered dietitian who doesn't, either is fresh out of school or doesn't have a lot of experience yet, they simply may not know the breadth of research and the breadth of real life experience that has actually been done on these differing carb, fat, protein diets. Mm. So keep that in mind, number one. Two, yes, I completely disagree with the extremes, right? Absolutely. Unless there's a complete health challenge that is needed to be met. But for athletes, the extremes are not sustainable. If you want quick weight loss, so be it. But we're not talking behavior change. We're not talking about being realistic. Mm. So, and I will say this, the high carb, low fat, it was back in the days, it was I don't want to say proven, but there was some good research to support good performance benefits. However, as we've progressed over the past couple of decades, there's actually medical literature, pointing it towards increased disease states. So obviously we know that extreme isn't necessary. Going on the other extreme, which is not low carb, high fat, but it's really the ketogenic is the extreme. There's actually some great medical literature for supporting that in seizure patients and people with Alzheimer's. Like, a lot of this literature is really up and coming. What we don't have is for the performance-based runner. And that's what's lacking right now. So people who go ketogenic, they're playing with it, but it's just like any other diet, right? They're going to stay with it maybe for a month if they're lucky, maybe even for a few months if they're really, really strict. But they're going to go off of it because it doesn't fit into their lifestyle. They are outcast unless they're living in a bubble and they're not going out in public and they're not working at a job. It is very difficult to follow a ketogenic diet. I'm not saying the ketogenic diet is bad, but it's very difficult for runners or any endurance athlete to support. Does it work to increase fat burning? Oh, absolutely. Because you're limiting your carbohydrates to about 20 to 50 grams a day. So absolutely that works, but it's very restrictive. So kind of moving up that ladder, the low carb, high fat is kind of that meat in the middle scenario where the interesting thing about these low carb, high fat diets are there's no true definition of a low carb, high fat diet in the literature, right? It's not, for ketogenic, for a ketogenic diet to work, you need to measure your ketones. That's the only way you know how many carbohydrates to eat. But on low carb, high fat, there's a lot of wiggle room in there, right? You could eat, I'm sorry to throw out numbers, but you could eat 50 grams a day of carbs, or you could eat 200 grams of carbohydrates a day, right? That could still be low carb. Like I used to eat 500 to 600 grams of carbohydrates a day within my high carb, low fat, days. And if I go from 500 to 600 down to 400, well, for me, that's low carb.
Yeah. Depending how much you're burning, you can definitely put some carbs away there.
Absolutely. So I would say somewhere in the middle, and this is the unfortunate part, is we don't know the exact middle for every individual because we are so different. And I've been doing a lot of genomic testing on individuals. So kind of looking at these different genes that are related to not only minerals and micronutrients, but also your eating behaviors. So they're actually genes in our body that dictate eating behaviors, dictate how we process fat and carbohydrate. I've been putting that data with blood work, just basic blood work data, to try to get a better picture of an individual in terms of how much should they eat, carbohydrate, fat, protein. Like I can give anybody the basic, the hand model. I could go as quantitative as they want also, and I can help them burn fat and become more metabolically efficient. But I don't know what their sweet spot is yet until you do, I call it popping the hood. Until you understand more about your body, you don't really know where you should be, right? And that was proven. I did this experiment on myself a few years ago and did some blood work testing, and I did some metabolic efficiency testing and did a pre and post in a 4-week period. And, this is just sample size of one. And this was me. And I have genetic history of cardiovascular disease, high cholesterol, all that stuff that actually quite a few athletes have in their family history. And I found for me, the range of carbohydrates that was not only improving my health, but also improving my performance. And it took, 4 weeks of some manipulation. So that's why I go back and say, this isn't a one shot in the dark. This is actually a moving target where we may start with a quote unquote low carb, high fat diet. But like I said earlier, the low carb might just be, 25% less carbs than you normally eat. For every person, there is a sweet spot. And that's what drives me crazy about these diets out there, is they don't allow that individuality.
Oh, absolutely. And, you were just talking about the research that you've started to do with how genes kind of come into play with this. It sounds like this is might be a bit of a new territory for you. So you haven't done maybe a whole lot. Yeah. So
yeah,
have you?
It's only been a couple of years.
Okay.
And
yeah.
I haven't. I mean, it's, if you think about it, and a lot of people jump to the conclusion, they're like, why don't you have that information? I'm like, because it takes a genomics test, it takes a blood work test, it takes a metabolic efficiency test, it takes someone, I mean, obviously this stuff is not cheap either, right?
Oh,
it takes
yeah.
someone with the financial means. So what I'm trying to do is I try to get a few, you know, endurance athletes here and there that can actually go through all this. What I'm trying to do though, is take it more from the data I'm getting, I'm trying to bring it to the masses and saying, okay, you know, kind of the bell-shaped curve model, right?
Yeah.
A few of you will be outside the bell-shaped curve, but the most part, here's kind of where we're seeing, like I've developed a carbohydrate range that I believe firmly based on the research that is out there, as well as the real life testing that I've done, that I think everybody should be in. But the range has a 90 gram swing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a huge range, but it accounts for nutrition periodization too. So it may be like one day if I'm doing my long run, well, maybe I'm more of that 2-to-1 ratio of carb to protein, but tomorrow's my rest day. So now I'm 1-to-1. So it does account for those fluctuations in training for sure.
Okay. Very interesting.
But yeah, those are new on the horizon
right
now.
Yeah. Well, so I know it's new for you, but is the long-term goal to essentially kind of also see where there might be some trends and help people, you know, kind of maybe individualize their diets a little better to them, depending on gender and their maybe their medical background, whatever the case may be? Is
yes.
that kind of the goal
yeah.
too?
Absolutely. Well, I'll first say that, yes, absolutely. I totally agree with you. The first goal is to get the diet handcuffs off of them, to be honest with you, right?
Okay.
Just to get the handcuffs off, the mentality out of their brain and say, whew, I can breathe now. I'm free from that. Then you start exploring and saying, okay, like anytime a runner comes to me, you know, there's an extensive medical health history, nutrition questionnaire. Like they, you know, the goal is to understand based on the genes that they were given, how should they eat to improve the environment of which they're actually living in terms of their nutrition, right? And their obviously their training, but then to factor in their health goals, their body weight goals, their body composition goals, their performance goals. So get the handcuffs off, then individualize based on medical concerns, obviously health concerns, and then look at performance. So I think so many runners these days are out to chase a new PR. They're forgetting about the health challenges and really the health benefits first. And that's been my goal since day one of being a sport dietitian, is just saying, you know, health before performance. You can't perform if you're not healthy. And again, I work with a lot of aging athletes, and the one thing that I see is blood work gets worse. Cortisol levels are weird. DHEA hormone levels are weird. So all these, like the adrenal insufficiencies, and everything is happening as we get older. Maybe it was happening as we were younger, but we never measured it, right? but now we're actually, because all this stress, especially in 40s and 50s and above, people are having a lot of stress these days from career and retirement and all
absolutely.
This stuff. And it has a toll on hormone levels. And I'm glad you actually introduced the gender differences too. Males and females are not the same. I mean, just like a child and an adult is not the same. I can't feed a child and an adult the same. Child runner, I actually work with a lot of young cross-country runners and track runners. They're completely different than us, right? Even though we're still all runners. So it's the same thing with a male and female, because obviously females have a little bit more hormonal fluctuations. And depending on the decade of life, there are a lot of other factors involved in nutrition and kind of crafting that daily nutrition plan. And I'm not saying males are easy, but I'm definitely saying that females are a little more complex depending on where they are in their lifespan.
After the break, we'll continue our discussion on how best to tailor your diet to fit your needs, and how you can actually do that with the aid of a little something called your metabolic efficiency point. This is Sinead Hockey, and you're listening to Run to the Top at Runners Connect. Nod with me if you've ever been in the middle of a training segment and had to miss a few days because you either got sick or work got busy or you had to travel. I can pretty much guarantee that all of you listening have experienced this before, and that's where having a coach becomes really valuable. When life throws you a few curveballs, we can adjust your workouts so you're not falling behind and not doing too much to try and catch back up. We also do everything we can to make sure you get the most out of every single workout. And that's just one of the awesome features our training plans have. We also build in strength workouts completely custom to your weaknesses, injuries, and goal race distance. Each workout you're assigned comes with in-depth instructions, and we of course build the training plan completely around you. No templates, no modifications needed on your end, just a training plan written to your strengths and weaknesses and designed to help you achieve your goals. If you want to check it out, head on over to runnersconnect.net/train and start a free 2-week trial. We hope you join us. We are back with Bob Sivahar. And Bob, earlier you mentioned women actually have different nutritional needs depending on their hormonal fluctuations.
Oh, yeah.
Can you kind of speak on that a little bit? Has there been any research about nutrition periodization as it relates to the menstrual cycle and even menopause?
Yeah, I don't believe there's a lot of research on it. And I think that's more of the, okay, let's dip into real life now, because as we follow more of these active females going through premenopause, menopause, postmenopause, we're trying to align, and not we, I don't do a lot of work here. Actually, my colleague at Energy, Dina, does a lot more in the female cycles and actually is looking more at the research and digging into it. But what we know is that these different hormonal fluctuations, as they ebb and flow, there are different, let's call them challenges in the body, in the way the body actually oxidizes or mobilizes and utilizes different nutrients. And that's even the case. I mean, the very simplistic case is we know females burn more fat during exercise than do males, right?
Interesting.
But now we're asking the question, well, what happens as you enter your 40s and 50s and here comes the menopause? And now what's happening, not only during exercise, and not to say I don't care about what happens during exercise, but you know, you may run an hour or two a day and that's it, right? What happens outside of exercise is going to be more profound in terms of changes and alterations than what happens in exercise. So I don't believe a lot of the research has looked at that yet, but definitely following, and I could tell you there's not a lot on nutrition periodization in menopause pre or during or post. But we are making some speculations as we follow these females through it.
That's great. Well, yeah, like you said, there's been so little research on that area and so little literature. Yeah. So it's good to see that you are taking steps to kind of see what goes on there. And I'll definitely be interested to keep track of that. But, you know, a few more things I did want to talk to you about besides that were there is this phrase of yours called the metabolic efficiency point. And so can you talk on that a little bit? What is that and how does it, can you just maybe describe that a little bit?
Yeah. So this is a point in your body where it basically shifts from fat burning to carbohydrate burning. That's the easiest way to describe it. So as an example, as we're sitting here talking in a non-disease state, so assuming we don't have diabetes or any cardiovascular disease, we should be burning quite a bit of fat as we're sitting here, right? But if we get up and we start warming up, we go outside for an easy, quote unquote, easy run, our bodies start to say, oh, we need a little bit more carbohydrate to fuel this exercise. Now, maybe we end up on the base of a hill and we start some hill repeats, some maximal effort hill repeats. Those are maximal efforts. When our body goes high intensity, it shifts into more carbohydrate burning. So at a certain point of exercise intensity, your body will shift from fat burning to carbohydrate burning. And I've developed the test, the metabolic efficiency test, that actually measures where that is at. So we can pinpoint where that's at from a pace perspective, miles per hour, and heart rate. And then we can really describe this whole association of how efficient or inefficient an endurance runner is and give them actually a really good nutrition prescription as well as exercise prescription based on what their physiology is doing. Now, I will add this. I've measured a lot of endurance athletes in the past years. Some of them have no metabolic efficiency point. There's actually three different levels. The level one is they don't have a metabolic efficiency point because they're, I call them the carb addicts, right? They have such a high carbohydrate diet. And if you remember, and I didn't mention this too much, but the more carbohydrates you eat and the lower fat and protein you eat, the more carbs you eat, the more you burn. So these guys and girls are actually burning so many carbohydrate that they're inefficient at using their fat stores. Oh. These are usually the ones that want weight loss and body composition changes, right? So that's the first stage. The second stage is, yes, they have a metabolic efficiency point, so they cross, but maybe it's low. Maybe, you know, if this person normally can run in, you know, an 8 minute mile for a marathon, maybe it happens like at an 11 minute mile. So they're, yes, they switch over, but they're still not efficient in burning a lot of fat. And then the last example is someone is so efficient at burning fat that they're off the charts. And I'll, this is interesting because we find most of those as ultra runners. Mm-hmm. So it's because now if you think about it, right, these guys and girls are training at a low intensity, which we can talk about here in a second. And that is actually teaching their body to burn more fat from an exercise perspective, but they're also probably following a pretty good daily nutrition plan to support metabolic efficiency or fat adaptation also. So the interesting thing is here is in my data set, in my practice, I have measured this metabolic efficiency point either not happening or actually going all the way up to 87% of max VO2. Oh. Now, let me explain what this means. In early research, and this was about 30, 40 years ago, they found that this point, this cross, happened between about 63 and 65% of max intensity, max VO2. This is why you see, if you go on a treadmill, I think they're still on treadmills these days, these fat burning zones, you know, they're usually very colored, mm-hmm. coordinated. That is aligned based on 30 or 40 year old research that says, if you exercise under 63 to 65% of your max intensity, you'll burn more fat. Well, what I've done these past 12 years is I've proved that wrong. Because I've measured athletes, you know, like I just said, the highest has been 87% of their max VO2, and they're still burning fat, predominantly more fat. But here's a great thing is now finally, this just came out this year. There was a research article that took, I think it was hundreds of these kind of tests, and they found that there, and this was in research, not Bob's practical, right? They found that this metabolic efficiency point happened between 23% of max VO2, and I think it went up to 89% of max VO2.
Bit of a range.
So it's great. It's a huge range, right? Which means, you know, it goes back to a saying that we have at Energy Performance is test, don't guess. Like, like you can come up to me and say, hey, I eat this way. Here's my training program. Do you think I'm metabolically efficient? And I could probably make an educated guess, but are you 23% or are you 89%? But the great part is now we know that you can burn fat at higher intensities because not only have I proven it in my testing, but now we've got research to back that up. So there's hope for these, you know, quote unquote, carbohydrate sugar burners to actually turn the table a little bit and start burning more fat at higher intensities. And some of your listeners may say, okay, great, but who cares? Like, why do I want to do that? If you're burning fat at higher intensities, that means you're preserving carbohydrates until you really need them. Oh. You need carbohydrates at higher intensities, right? So say you're going up a hill, say you're doing Boston, you've got Heartbreak Hill. That's when your body needs more carbohydrates. Maybe I'm doing an ultra, maybe I'm doing a trail marathon, whatever it is, and there's hills, or maybe it's the finish line sprint. Those are all the times where your body needs more carbohydrate. If you're teaching it to burn more fat at higher intensity levels, you're preserving carbohydrates until you really need to use them. And when you need them, a lot of them will be there.
Oh, that's so interesting. Really, that's so cool. Okay, so yeah, you know, like you said, there's a huge range here. So clearly nutrition is going to be just as big of a range there as well. But when it comes to these different ends of the spectrum, say someone has their metabolic efficiency point is at 23% of their VO2 max, or someone is on the other side where they are at 87%, how would they go about manipulating this point through nutrition for both of those different sides of the spectrum?
Yeah. So let me preface this by saying the creation of implementing, or actually the creation of improving your metabolic efficiency is really looking at nutrition, about three quarters of the equation, right? In exercise or aerobic exercise, like that zone one, zone two training, 25%. So I have shown in my practice that both are important, but nutrition has a very, very much more robust effect on improving this metabolic efficiency. So that said, right, taking that in consideration, the easiest thing to do, and it all comes back to what I first said, right? Controlling and optimizing blood sugar. I have literally taken people kind of pre and post this metabolic efficiency testing and just given them the guidelines of following this hand model, this one-to-one ratio thing without counting anything. And they have improved significantly in 4 to 8 weeks.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And that was just extremely qualitative. You can imagine what happens if I go a little quantitative with my analytical runners. They go through the roof with their improvements, because obviously, you know, a little goes a long way, but if you, and it's not promoting people to count calories and count grams, but if you do get more exact, it's just like testing. If you know what you're putting in, you probably are manipulating the organism, your body, a little bit better, right? So I would say this, the easiest way to do this, use the hand model as much as possible. Try to do that one-to-one ratio. That will improve your metabolic efficiency, depending on how low or how high you start. Absolutely. If you want further improvements, then you talk to someone about getting a little bit more specific, or like if the hand model, you know, I've come up with a certification too. I don't know if you knew this, but I teach health professionals about metabolic efficiency. So I certify them. The reason I'm telling you this is because there are five different nutritional strategies to help someone improve their metabolic efficiency, depending on where they are at in their stage of, we call it stage of readiness, stage of wanting to, and willing to change, we implement certain dietary strategies. So I'm talking about the hand model. That's always step one, because we want to kind of see where people are at in their implementation, their ready to change, right? So if someone is ready, the hand model is great, but maybe that guy or girl is your analytical runner and they want numbers. Mm. Well, maybe we'll progress through the hand model for a couple of weeks and then we'll go to the next model, right? So my point is, I want everybody to adopt the hand model first to see if it's going to be that go-to nutrition strategy, or if we need to add a little bit extra to it.
Interesting. Okay. So, I mean, it really sounds like you work with people of all walks of life, and I'm sure you work with a lot of people that are subscribers to different diets as well. So say vegetarians and vegans, maybe even paleo runners. Is it hard to kind of mold this metabolic efficiency training around those diets?
I'll tell you what, it's the most difficult ones to mold metabolic efficiency or introduce metabolic efficiency to are vegans and vegetarians. And having been one for 10 years, actually that my little experiment a few years ago made me go non-vegetarian.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, it's very fascinating. And it was only because my blood work showed improvements as I reduced my carbohydrates and increased my fat. And obviously my metabolic efficiency, like I became more fat adapted, but I really cared about my blood work because, as I mentioned earlier, my family history was not good. So I need, from a health perspective, I needed to get in charge of that. So that said, I know what it means to be a vegetarian. I wasn't full vegan, but here's the reason why it's hard, because vegans and vegetarians, depending on the level of vegetarianism, their protein sources are carbohydrate sources. So what I told you a little bit earlier, I really blew through it fast. To better control blood sugar, to optimize blood sugar, you need to combine protein, fat, and fiber together, preferably in the same meal. So if you think about a pure vegan, maybe they're eating nuts and beans. Well, those are great, but they're very high in carbohydrate. Mm. Yes, they still have protein and fat, right? Nuts specifically, but traditionally we see vegans having a higher carb, kind of low to moderate protein, kind of low to moderate fat. And it's not, I'm not saying that's bad. It's just very difficult to improve their metabolic efficiency. It is possible, but it's just a lot more difficult. Vegetarians, a little bit easier because sometimes they'll include eggs or fish or, they're I call them flexitarians. paleo guys and girls, super easy. Low carb, high fat guys and girls, super easy to adapt metabolic efficiency. Because remember though, I mean, keep this in mind too. I guess I'm a little biased. these are all diets, right? I guess you could argue veganism and vegetarianism, that's more of a lifestyle change. But you're talking paleo, you're talking low carb, high fat, ketogenic, those are diets. And I don't know if you want, like, metabolic efficiency is a lifestyle, right? It's not really supporting diets. I would say that, can you be paleo to be metabolically efficient? Yeah, but why not just call yourself metabolically efficient? Because it's more of a lifestyle than a diet. Like, and those are the handcuffs, right? If I'm paleo, I have the paleo handcuffs on. Until someone breaks those off, then I'm not paleo anymore, right? So I think going towards metabolic efficiency training liberates those individuals to get the handcuffs off, breathe a little bit easier, and say, oh, I can actually develop this good relationship with food, still improve my fat burning, still have great health benefits, great performance benefits. And you know what? They can do low carb, high fat, because it's a lifestyle, right? If they choose to eat paleo, whatever that means these days, they can do that in a metabolic efficiency plan, because it's not a diet, it's a lifestyle. And any lifestyle we adapt to, right? So so I use myself as an example. When I started this whole endurance sport thing, you know, I started in short distance triathlons, then I moved up into Ironman, then I went into, you know, throughout then I did some marathons, and then I went into ultra running. And then I backed down from ultra running, then I just did short trail races. And what I'm saying is, we adapt our physical training into our lifestyle. Why aren't we adapting our nutritional training into our lifestyle by not following diets?
That is a good point. That's a great point. I've never heard it put that way. Yeah, that makes complete sense too. It does. Very interesting.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, Bob, clearly, I mean, you've worked with, like you said, you work with all sorts of runners, from different skill levels up to the type of lifestyles and even diets that they subscribe to. So I did want to ask you, do you offer personal consultations, is that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. Through Energy Performance, I have two dietitians that work with me, and we all specialize in nutrition periodization and metabolic efficiency, but just remember, it's not, you know, someone coming to us, we're not going to give them a diet. You know, we're going to assimilate everything. We're going to break down their lifestyle, what they do for a career, their travel, their family life, their support system. And then we're going to recommend the best nutrition strategy for their health and performance. So absolutely do one-on-one consultations all the time.
That's great. Well, and
testing for that matter.
Oh, perfect. Okay. So we're definitely going to link that in the show notes, but they can also find it at your site for anyone who's interested. And Bob, this has been, I mean, I think any runner would be interested in your consultations. I think with most of these meal plans and diets that are out there currently, it's very one size fits all. And you guys definitely take everything into consideration, which is pretty unique, I think. So Bob, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. I've learned so much during this, and I'm sure our listeners have too. So thanks again.
Good. Oh, it's been my pleasure. I love chatting about this and opening people's eyes and just providing that education, so hopefully they can better their health and performance.
Whew. I feel like we packed as much as we could into this episode, and I still didn't get to everything I wanted to. That said, I was talking to Bob a little after the interview, and we agree these concepts are a lot to digest. It's been a few days now since Bob and I sat down, and I am still wrapping my head around the whole metabolic efficiency point thing. Bob's been kind enough to agree to come on for another interview in a couple months, where we'll pick up where we left off. But in the meantime, if anything Bob said today left you with some questions, please feel free to send them to me at hockey@runnersconnect.net. Again, that's HAUGHEY. I would love to hear what has you guys curious, and I'll actually include your questions with your name in the upcoming interview with Bob. So please do feel free to email me whatever questions you have. I know today's interview was a bit technical, so also be sure to check out the show notes for details from today's podcast and links where you can learn more about Bob and his consultation services. You can find those show notes at runnersconnect.net/RC287. Before I sign off, next week we'll be hearing from gadget guru Ray Maker. Ray is one of, if not the most highly esteemed fitness tech experts in the world, And his product review blog, DC Rainmaker, gets over 1 million visitors a month. Ray knows everything you could possibly want to know about GPS watches, fitness trackers, and really every other endurance sport gadget out there. So be sure to check out his interview next week. Until then, thank you so much again for joining me today, and I hope you have a fantastic week.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from RunnersConnect.net.